We are in the second month, November at least, of the season. It's about 11% old. And Sean, on Saturday, we can have history, potentially. The Florida Panthers and Carolina Hurricanes have to win one more game, and they could be the first two teams in the National Hockey League to play each other when each of them do not have a regulation loss through the first nine games at least. Florida's 8-0-1, Carolina's 8-0-0. So that's where we are right now. Carolina and Florida dominating the National Hockey League.
Yeah, so if you ask me to make a bet on who those teams would be in the history of the NHL, the whole history of the NHL, Montreal Canadiens, Toronto Maple Leafs, Boston Bruins, Chicago Blackhawks, all those teams, I'd pick Florida and Carolina. But it's awesome, and they are the best teams right now. There's no question. It hasn't been fluke. They've beaten really good teams along the way, and they're just dominating. You look at those two teams. Carolina has five players averaging more than a point a game at this point. Like, you could say it's only eight games in, nine games in. Nobody else is doing that. Like, they're so deep. Their defense is so good. They're getting great goaltending, and they have the coach of the year. So, like, when you look at it, you're not like, oh, this is a small sample size. They're going to come back to earth. They are going to come back to earth. They're not going 82-0. I'm willing to bet on that. But they're a wagon.
They are. No question about it. We had Ian Cole on the podcast last week talking about it. But I want to talk more about Carolina and Florida. I do, and I'm very curious if that history will happen on Saturday. They each have to get through another game. But this week, we are blessed to be joined by our colleague, Mike Zeisberger from Toronto. And what better place, Sean, to start with Zeis than with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who may all of a sudden themselves, Zeis, are they now off the schneid, a wagon themselves? Mitch Marner scoring, Matthews is scoring. Is this team healed and solved?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, guys. I'm trying to wrap my head around that blessed description. One man's blessed is another man's, I don't know, weight on his shoulders. I don't know how you want to put it, but yeah, I mean, I'll segue into this. Speaking of weight on his shoulders, Sheldon Keefe must feel like the weight of the CN Tower is off his, because, when they went into Chicago last week, coming off three bad losses, losing at home to San Jose, losing 7-1 to the Wilkes-Barre Penguins in Pittsburgh. I mean, that and then losing to Carolina, which is you accurately stated. I mean, this is a team that, I am not surprised they're playing the way that they are. But that Pittsburgh game, guys, really had people doing a lot of soul searching, because the Penguins did not have in their lineup, and we'll go over this, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Letang, Ryan Rust, and Jeff Carter. And you lose 7-1 to a team like that, you look lackluster when you did it. And I think the alarming thing for a lot of people in that game was the fact that 2 years ago, it eerily was similar to a game in Pittsburgh that eventually, I think 3 or 4 days later, led to the firing of Mike Babcock, because ownership just didn't see a lot of zeal and a lot of emotion. And that was the same this time around. Now, I think all the talk here, and I know this comes as a shock to you guys, that in Toronto, everything is blown out of proportion. Breaking news here. But he said, tongue firmly in cheek. But, all this talk about, like, is it Sheldon Keefe's fault? I mean, this is Sheldon Keefe's first season. He's taken them to, the play-in round the first year he was coach, playoffs last year. This is the first season that he's actually had a full training camp with the team. So to say it's the coach's fault, well, I think you have to look at a lot of different places, including – the flaws in the way this team was built. So the fact that they've been able to turn it around, the fact that they slowly have been looking more like the team that everybody expected. And I think that even though they played a Vegas team that was just crushed by injuries on Tuesday night, the bottom line is in that game is that Auston Matthews and Mitch Marner came into that game having combined for two goals in the entire season, one goal each. Matthews scored two alone in the second period, and Marner had 3 points. So it's cliche, but the bottom line is your best players have to be your best players. Up until this week, they haven't been, and they are finally showing it. And I think that, that sigh you get, that collective sigh you guys hear south of the border, is the fan base all of a sudden thinking, oh, we don't have to burn the arena down now.
So, Mike, you followed this team for a long time through its ups and downs, and the points you make are great, but the thing that scares me, and if you listen to kind of the reports that came out once they started winning, you know, they started with that game against Chicago, which would have been a nightmare had they lost, and several people have said that Wayne Simmons tearing the hide off the team in intermission is what turned it around. Does it concern you at all that Wayne Simmons, who's a great player and a great leader, has to be the guy that saves the Toronto Maple Leafs season when you look at that roster and what players are being paid and what players are expected to do?
Sean, emotionally, it doesn't surprise me in terms of the fact that that's one of the reasons they brought this guy in. He's fiery. He's from the area, so he understands how everything is looked at in a fishbowl. So instead of using it as an excuse about all the outside noise, he understands the pressures that are on the team. Where I am concerned, to your point, is the fact that why do they need this? Because we're going to get back to a recurring theme with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the fact is, this wonderfully talented core has yet to win a playoff series. And by that, I include that the year that they played the play-in round against Columbus. But they've yet to win one of those. The franchise itself hasn't won one since 2004. But this core, okay, so Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, not so much, but he's been in there for the last three. But Morgan Rielly as well. They have not won a win or go home series. It's four in a row. So, you talk about talent, and that's the frustrating thing to the fan base and any observers of this team. Talent isn't an issue, but why do you have to, like you said, get them fired up? I mean, it should come naturally, and yet over and over and over again at crunch time, they're not able to do it.
Because this doesn't feel like crunch time to them. I think that might have something to do with it. And we know that they haven't been able to do it at crunch time, but they also have heard for an entire off season and training camp, and I mean, even before that, that what they do in the playoffs is all that matters.
Yeah.
Right. And
got to get there first, Dan.
Got to get there first. I understand that. But the mentality is, well, we have to win in the playoffs. And sometimes you can lose yourself early in the regular season in October and forget about that. You know, you almost, you know, make the assumption that you'll get there, and that's when you have to make your money, and that's when you have to make do. But they have to get there first. And look, I going back to what you were saying earlier, Zai's about the talk about Sheldon Keefe, I kind of laughed at it, because to me, Sheldon Keefe is tied with Kyle Dubas here. Mm-hmm. They're tied together, and there's no way, in my estimation, that the Toronto Maple Leafs, with the way they're built now, are making a change to the GM and the coach midseason. That's not happening, right? And if they make a change to the GM and the coach midseason, don't they also have to make a change to the president too? So are we talking about them changing out the three biggest guys in the organization on the hockey operations side middle of the season? No. Sheldon Keefe's got this team. He's got this job, and it's his job to turn this into a team that can be hard to play against come playoff time. It's November 3rd. They've had a bit of a struggle. I think it was a very important win last night, Tuesday night, against the Vegas Golden Knights, depleted lineup of a very good team. Same as the Pittsburgh Penguins, right? Mm-hmm. Depleted lineup. They lose 7-1 to Pittsburgh, as you pointed out, and they didn't show up. They just walked into the arena and said, they don't have all these players. We're going to win. And Drew O'Connor scores a hat trick on them, right? They walk into the arena last night. They see that Vegas doesn't have Stone and Pacioretty and Tuck and Carlson and Lord knows who else, you know, they don't have all these guys. What do? They go out and win four to nothing. Right. So to me, that's a growth game from what they were against Pittsburgh to what they were against Vegas. That's a sign of big time growth in a short period of time for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yes. Everything else still exists and this doesn't solve them. No, I joked at the beginning. Are they solved? No, they're not, but they have a slow start. And I don't have a problem with Wayne Simmonds ripping into the team a little bit either. He's an emotional guy, like you said, Zyes. Now it's time to pick it up. It's crunch time now. Yeah. And I think there might be starting to feel that a little bit.
No, and as you know, I alluded to earlier, and for the three of us, this isn't our first rodeo. So you guys are quite aware of the fishbowl and the microscope and how everything is blown out of proportion in Toronto, but you know, when these guys are reminded of the quick start, and, you know, we're circle back to Carolina that Freddie Anderson is on. And the ironic thing to it, and this was a big topic on some of the top talk radio stations here, is so we all know, you know, despite his injury woes last year, Jack Campbell set the record for victories at the start of a season with 11. And that may have played into along with obviously salary cap implications, why they let Freddie Anderson go, because he invariably took over the number one job from Freddie Anderson, who goes somewhere else. And that was four wins away from equaling the record that the guy who replaced him in Toronto has. So, and you know, like a little nugget like that is just going to blow up here in the city. And, you know, that's another thing when we talk about scapegoats. I mean, Freddie Anderson became that kind of scapegoat for the fan base here for their shortcomings in past postseasons. Well, you know what? It's a group effort. And now I think people are seeing that this is just some kind of stigma that's with the core that they have to get out of. And Dan, like we talked about, the bottom line is, yeah, you know, everybody wants them to show it in April, but to reaffirm the point, they got to get there first, and there is nothing given, especially in a division that's got Boston, in a division that's got Florida, a division that's got Tampa. And hey, I'm not saying this team will make the playoffs, but last Saturday I had a chance to watch the Detroit Red Wings live for the first time in 2 years. I'm not saying that these guys are going to make the playoffs, but they have the best young cachet of young players that I have seen a Detroit Red Wings team have in a long time.
I think they'll get to the playoffs, and I think they'll be a dangerous team in the playoffs. But of course, we can't sit here and say they'll win because they haven't since 2004 in the playoffs. Anyway, that's a lot of Leafs, but you brought up a team that I definitely wanted to talk about. So I got a question in my mailbag this week on the Calder Trophy race. And so the question was really, since, you know, what do you think of the Calder Trophy race? Cole Caulfield being sent down to Laval now and all that. To me, the Calder Trophy race at this present time is in the Detroit Red Wings locker room. Mo Sider and Lucas Raymond, you brought up this team. How impressed were you of those two guys when you watched them the other day? Because anytime I have seen, in particular, Moritz Sider, how good he has been, physical, aggressive, but jumps into the play, does not look lost at all defensively. To me, he's the favorite right now for a Calder Trophy. He was the rookie of the month in October. So tell me a little bit about, Zyes, you were there, you watched them live. I haven't had a chance to see the Red Wings live in person yet. I mean, like, where do you, what was your takeaway of Sider and then Raymond especially too?
No, those are great points, Dan. Like I said, I was really impressed with what I saw from Detroit. And we're so caught up in wins and losses. It kind of reminded me the first year that Marner and Matthews were with the Leafs. Now, I'm not trying to make a comparison of those two players with the two Detroit players. But just, I remember in their rookie years, the fan base was kind of like, you know, we're not sure if we're going to make the playoffs, but for the first time, when you watch shift by shift, these guys play, it springs hope, okay? They're fun to watch. You can see the upside and how high the ceiling is for them. They're going to make rookie mistakes, but and that's what I saw with the Detroit Red Wings, and in particular the two guys that you talked about. And I want to focus on Sider for a second. I watched a bit of the game with a longtime scout and former NHLer who's now with the Los Angeles Kings organization, and he brought up a great point. We were talking about Sider, and his point was, when you watch this kid play, he plays with such poise that he doesn't always have to play the game with the gas pedal hammered to the floor. He knows when to bring it back a bit. He knows when to, even at a young age, to control the flow of what's going on the ice. And that's, you know, you see that a little bit from Victor Hedman now. The guy that I remember being able to slow down a game when needed is Ray Bourque. That's would be my prototypical guy for doing that. But, you know, when you have a former player and a scout telling you that, and then you start watching, it's like, yeah, this kid plays with poise far beyond his age. And the ironic thing, Dan, and I think that you, Sean, and I remember this, is that when he was picked in the draft, and I'm trying to think, was he number four maybe? I think he was in that four to six. But there were a lot of oohs and ahs from observers when they picked him, because there were some guys on the boards of the so-called experts that they thought should have been picked ahead of him. But, you know, the one thing I'll say, Stevie Y played all those years with Nick Lidstrom. Not saying that Sider's another Lidstrom, but I think Yzerman is, we saw it in Tampa too. He's a pretty good evaluator of talent. He listens to his people. And all of a sudden now, it doesn't look like a reach anymore. It looks like a brilliant pick. And, you know, I saw flashes from Raymond like that too. We saw that, you know, like many young goal scorers, he's hot and cold. I mean, obviously, you know, he had that game with the hat trick. But, and I always remember what Paul Maurice told me once. He said, the coach of the Winnipeg Jets when he was in Toronto, he said he usually gauges how a defenseman is going to be by at least 170 games into his career, because it's such a difficult position to play. So you don't want to start saying Sider's going to be this or the next Lidstrom. I don't like it when people do that. But the poise and the composure that he showed, like the scout said with me, is something that's very, very difficult to teach. And if you see a kid at that young age being able to exhibit it, you know, I think you're already a step ahead of the game. So this is going to be a fun team to watch.
On the flip side of that, like you just talked about, you know, we don't want to put these huge expectations on players. We did it. Cole Caulfield.
Yeah, you're right.
Was going to be the next 40 goal scorer in this league. Came in, scored at every level, played well in the playoffs. He's sitting in Laval now, where he belongs, by the way.
Yeah.
Not, and that's not a reflection on him. That's a reflection on the team that he plays for. Why are you going to let this kid get run over every game as one of the primary scoring threats on the team with nobody to help him? Send him down, let him get his confidence, and come back up when things are a little bit better. But what do you think about that move? It's kind of a synopsis of what's happened in Montreal this year. Everything that could go wrong has gone wrong.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Sean. And if you know, you and I 4 months ago had the privilege of being at the Stanley Cup final at the Bell Center. And I remember, I think it was Anderson or Toffoli. I think it was Anderson who scored the overtime goal in the one game that Montreal won. But I remember it was set up, you know, Cole Caulfield, you know, was on the ice for that and helped set it up. And the plays that he made, and it's like anything. I mean, you see the kid on TV, it's one thing. You see him live, and it's another. And he was electric then. You know, and because it's under the spotlight of the Stanley Cup final, you're just going like, this kid isn't bothered by anything. Look at the confidence that he's playing with. But that's right there is a big thing. I don't think people give enough credit to how, doesn't matter how talented you are, what confidence means. Like, Cole Caulfield came in, had a Cinderella ride. So what obstacles did he face through that ride? None. Okay. It was smooth sailing. He just built on that. This year, you know, he comes into the season. Teams are game planning for Cole Caulfield. Okay. Everybody saw what he did in the playoffs. I talked to a couple coaches about this, and they game plan for that kid. Okay. And a lot of that has to do with being physical with him. He's obviously not the biggest guy. So he had some adversity, and we forget, I mean, kid's a teenager. Okay. He has never had to overcome adversity at the National Hockey League level. And when your entire team is going through adversity, okay. It would be a lot easier if the team as a whole was playing better and he wasn't, because they could pick him up, but they haven't been. So all of a sudden it's like, you know, why is Cole Caulfield not scoring? Well, if you're depending on a teenager to do this, that's a lot of weight to put on him. So I agree. As much of a gut punch it was to a lot of poolies, who picked him high, but you know, you got to look long-term for this kid. There's no doubt. Like I said, Sean, we saw it firsthand, what his upside is, but the bottom line is he's still a kid. His body is still going to grow. He's still got to get thicker. He's not going to grow taller, but he needs to grow thicker. And he needs to learn how to fight his way through things, because the playoffs last year and the handful of games he played before that, that's the only time he's ever played against men. Okay. This is a different animal right now. And in the AHL, I think he'll be able to learn how to overcome a lot of these things. So yeah, I agree with you. It was the perfect thing to do. Caught a lot of people by surprise, but given the way Montreal has been playing, you don't want to siphon all the confidence out of this kid and something that lingers for a couple of years.
Look, he's 20 years old.
Yeah.
And he's got one assist in 10 games.
Yep.
The American Hockey League is a fine league.
Yeah.
It's perfectly good for a guy like that to go get his confidence back. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying about the Leafs too. You know, it was crunch time when Caulfield came in. He came in off of a season, college season. He comes in at crunch time. The Habs have to win to make the playoffs, right?
Yep.
And you get into the playoffs, and obviously you have to win to advance. And he played well. He rode that wave as he came into the National Hockey League, scored a few goals, built the confidence, as you were talking about, Zies, rode that wave, rode it into the playoffs, had a handful of goals in the playoffs, 12 points, 4 goals, and it was all good, but it was crunch time all the way through.
Yep.
And it was like hockey, hockey, hockey all the time. And that was it. This is the beginning of the season. This is a fresh start. This is everybody's involved. Everybody's into it, you know, and it's a little bit different. This is his first time doing this, and it's not the same. It's just simply not the same. So he's got to learn, and there's nothing wrong with going down. Although the point, it was an interesting point. I heard it somewhere. When you're in Montreal, obviously you're in that fishbowl. When you're Cole Caulfield, who is now expected to be the next great goal scorer for the Montreal Canadiens, you are smack dab in the middle of that fishbowl. It's not like he went to Utica. It's not like he went to Binghamton. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not like he went to Providence or anything. He went to Laval, which is right there. I mean, he's not out of the market.
He's still
in the fishbowl.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And so I wonder how that plays, if that plays at all with a guy like that. Yeah, okay, fine. You know, you're not playing for the big team anymore, but everybody's still watching.
Look, if you want an example, look at one of his teammates, Nick Suzuki, who, you know, has made a big splash when he came in, and rightly so, deserved the big contract that he got in the offseason. And I don't have the stats in front of me, but I think as of last week, he hadn't scored a goal yet. So here's Nick Suzuki, was supposed to be the next great thing. They gave him the big money to be that, and he's off and struggling. And look, we forget sometimes this sport – the age of players that are being depended on has, we all three of us know this, has lowered and lowered and lowered. And now, you know, there's expectations on 21 and 22 year old kids, and they're getting the money to fulfill those expectations. I mean, it's tough because, you know, they still have to mature not only on the ice, but between the ears. And so, you know, I'm sure management looks at the struggles that Nick Suzuki is having right now and go, you know what, we want to shield Cole Caulfield a little bit from going through the same thing.
Well, and that's the thing. They can't shield anybody because there's nobody left to shield with.
There is.
Right there. Look, Cole Caulfield was drawing second and third period defensemen all the time.
Yep.
He's not anymore. You talk about game plan, and there's nobody else to game plan against.
Yeah, there
is. You put the names on the board, and he's right at the top now.
Yeah.
He's not five or six. He's one. And you say, okay, you know, we're going to take care of this kid, and if we take care of this kid, we're going to have an easy night. So when you look at really good rookies in this league, for the most part, they play on good teams.
Yeah.
Because they get to be sheltered, and they get to learn from other people. And a lot of those people that Cole Caulfield could have learned from are gone.
Yeah.
See ya. The captain's gone. The number one center's gone. Like, all those people that could pull him aside, put an arm around him and say, look, kid, I've been where you've been. We can fix this. It's going to get better. There's nobody that has that gravitas now to say, look, man, I've been where you've been. It's going to get better. Just trust me. You kind of look and you're like, well, how do you know?
Well, that's, you know what? That's a great point, Sean. And while you were talking about that, it kind of brought to my mind, you know, look at a handful of years ago when Elias Pettersson out in Vancouver first came in. Nobody expected him to have the impact that he did. And all of a sudden, even when, you know, he's had injury problems, but he's struggled this year. I think he's got one goal so far. He signed the new contract because, like you said, when he first came in, you're getting the third or, you know, the second or third defense pairing against you. No, you know, the Canucks now do not walk into any NHL arena where the opposition goes or is caught by surprise by Elias Pettersson. It's like, okay, 1A and 1B defense, go out and smother this guy. And he's got to learn how to work his way through it because you can't hide from it. And, you know, I think we're seeing some of that in Montreal too. And you made a great point with the Canadians too, because, you know, you can't take the Corey Perrys and the Deneaux and obviously Shea Weber and Carey Price out of there because, like you said, those are the guys that not only do you look up to as a young player on the ice, but off the ice. And, you know, there's no numbers that can really gauge the size of leadership or heart. And that's what Montreal, you know, is striving to find right now because of the guys that they lost that aren't there anymore.
I do find it interesting though. Last thing on this, I find it interesting though, that the same day they sent Cole Caulfield down is the day that they announced that Carey Price could be returning to Montreal soon. So a good bit of PR there, I think.
Well, you got to give the fans hope, don't you?
Yeah, Dan? Give the fans hope, but also change the narrative, right?
So even when you're two and eight.
Yeah, changing the narrative doesn't hurt. But you know, Zyes, it's interesting what you were talking about there in terms of young guys and adjusting, and everybody is you know, watching you. It got me thinking of another guy who's been in the news this week who has handled the adjustment to being a player that everybody's watching as well as anybody I can think of. And that's Adam Fox from the New York Rangers, right? I mean, this guy, he just signs a 7-year, $66.5 million deal, $9.5 million, which is the ballpark, right? It's the ballpark. It's the Cale Makar, Seth Jones, Zach Werenski, a little bit lower than that was Quinn Hughes, but that's what we're seeing, as you mentioned, Zyes. But Adam Fox, guys, I mean, he's got 100 points in 135 games in his NHL career now. The only other Rangers defenseman who scored that many points in fewer games were Brian Leetch in 102 and Sergei Zubov in 108. And where are those guys? They're in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Okay. Yeah. So Adam Fox wins the Norris Trophy and, dare I say, has been better this season than he was last season when he won the Norris Trophy. He leads the team in points with 11. His passes are sublime. His defense is excellent. And the Rangers now, yes, they blow a lead 2-0 in the third period of Vancouver, and they lose 3-2 in overtime. It's their they've got 6 points and six straight on the road, 5-0-1. They're 6-2-2 overall. They've got a goaltender who looks like he could be a Vezina Trophy candidate, and a defenseman who looks like he could be a Norris Trophy candidate yet again. All of a sudden, the New York Rangers are climbing the standings and climbing our Super 16 too.
Dan, normally I would say you scare me because you sound like the fandom of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, oh, this guy's gonna win this, and this guy's gonna win that. Except, okay, I'm not so sure that I don't agree with you, and here's why. You know, it's one thing, as I mentioned earlier, it's one thing to watch games on TV. The three of us are privileged to do what we do and be able to go into rinks. And I think especially for defensemen, it's so much different to see a guy live on the full scale of the arena, of the ice surface. And I had a chance to see Adam Fox earlier this season when the Rangers were in Toronto, in a game that the Rangers probably should have lost. They were badly outplayed. But to your point, the goalie was incredible. And to watch Adam Fox, you know, you're kind of going like, yeah, he's good, but what's all the hubbub about? And then you're sitting there watching his outlet passes, the ease with which he skates. I mean, he is one of these guys that, you know, is just so supremely gifted with the puck that all of a sudden it was like, okay, now I do know what all the hubbub is about. And you know, the game in Vancouver last night, there were a couple of shifts where he looked like the kid whose parents couldn't afford to put him into AAA hockey. So he's down in house league playing way, way above everybody else. He dominated shifts, and that's a difficult thing to do for anybody not named Connor McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon or people of that ilk. And you know what? And look at guys, I mean, watching that game last night, you're watching Fox, you're watching Quinn Hughes, Kel McCarr in Colorado. I just can't remember a time, and I know we've done a couple stories in the last year or so about it, but I can't remember a time at Heiskanen in Dallas where, you know, 23, 22 years old and under defenseman. I mean, it's incredible. I can't remember a time in this sport where you're seeing such a high quality defense, which as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, you know, Paul Maurice said it's so difficult to get a gauge on these guys. They're coming into the league and they look ready already, no pun intended. And I think that's why they're getting some of these contracts, because, you know, teams look at that, know what a vital commodity it is, and say, we're lucky to have this. We got to lock him up. So I agree, Dan. I mean, like I said, until I saw him live, I had questions about him. But this, you know, this kid is the real deal. And I know the cynics will say, well, thanks for that breaking news since he won the Norris Trophy. So that should be a 2-foot putt. But no, I mean, and it's scary to think what his upside is when, as you say, he's playing better than he did in a year where he won the Norris Trophy.
How can either of you guys even remember what Fox did last night? It was like the fifth best highlight of the game. The Thatcher Demko's
the
sequence where he lost his blocker. Made a scorpion save on his belly, not looking. It did about seven other things. Made it no stick. Made another save while he was waving at the referee with his bare hand. I'm holding my breath, hoping he doesn't break his hand, because he probably would have tried to catch with it at that point. He was so in the zone. You know, it looked like me when I was playing squirt hockey, but that's because my skates were too loose and my equipment was too big. So I would just fall down and everything would go all over the place, and I would try and get up and fall down again and maybe throw a pad in front of it. But all of that was planned. That is one of the greatest things I've seen this year in highlights.
Dominic Hasek had to be envious when he watched that, don't you think? That was just, I don't know what else to say, Sean. I mean, I think the fact, the term scorpion save says it all, but, you know.
And that was the third best part of the sequence, was the scorpion save.
Yeah. Well, and look it, I mean, you look at the way that Thatcher Demko is playing. And then you look at the way that the guy who they allowed to leave for salary cap implications, Jacob Markstrom, who went to Calgary, in so Vancouver could have Thatcher Demko. Jacob Markstrom had a run there where he had three shutouts in four games. So, you know, sometimes round pegs do find round holes. A lot of times in this sport, they find the square holes and they don't work out. And I know Markstrom struggled a bit last year, but he's playing excellent for Calgary. And Demko, I mean, you know, anybody that doesn't still has questions about him, to Sean's point, go look at a highlight of those couple of minutes, because even 30 seconds, because it was incredible.
Yeah, it was nuts. But I'm so happy, Zeiss, that you brought up Markstrom, because it leads me into another thing I wanted to talk about with you guys, which is the Calgary Flames. And you talk about round pegs finding round holes. I think a lot of us thought when Daryl Sutter came back, it could have been a round peg into a square hole, just because of the coaching style and how the game has evolved in the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years, right? Still since those Kings teams were winning the Stanley Cup. But you look at it, Calgary Flames are a Daryl Sutter team. Sean and I have talked about this on the podcast before. They're a Daryl Sutter team putting up the same type of numbers in, look, very small sample size of this season compared to, though, you know, if you look at like in the middle of the 2011-12 season to the through the end of the 2014 Stanley Cup run for the Kings. I mean, but goals against are down, penalty kill is up, shots against are down, puck possession is up. That's what the Kings were. That's what the Flames are right now. Great goaltending in LA when Sutter was there. Great goaltending in Calgary right now. And Markstrom had his shutout streak of nearly 145 minutes end when Luke Cunningham scored for the Nashville Predators last night. It's a team that I think we were all wondering, what could Calgary be this season? What's the future of Johnny Gaudreau? What's the future of Sean Monahan? Is it time for Matthew Tkachuk to exert his leadership? How do they replace Mark Giordano's leadership and on defense, just his, you know, ability on defense? What's Markstrom really? Is he going to be the goalie that we can, you know, we know he can be, or is he not? Like, and how does Sutter make it all work? Can he with his coaching style and whatnot? Small sample size, but man, it's working. And I am, they're the team that has surprised me the most for their success, because I just didn't know what to make of what the Calgary Flames could be. And look at that. They're a Daryl Sutter team.
It's funny, when I watch Calgary, I'm reminded all three of us are football fans. And when a football team has the ability to slow a game down, to work the clock, and to frustrate the offense of another team, people say they take the air out of the football. We'll give it to Daryl Sutter. He's found a way to take the air out of the puck, okay? Because it's almost like, we are going to suck all the offense out of you. We're going to suffocate you. We're going to be in your face, okay? And, you know, in soccer parlance, we're going to try to score off the transition. And in hockey parlance, off the forecheck, and we're going to grind you into a nub along the boards. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, you know, a couple of years ago, this was a team that was led by Sean Monahan. Okay. Now Sean Monahan is like, you know, sometimes they bump him up to two, but he's basically a third line center. you know, Daryl Sutter has turned Mangiapane into a Rocket Richard candidate just by playing that blueprint, okay? I don't think in the Calgary Flames playbook there's any plays designed to go east-west, okay? It's all north-south. Play to the identity that you are. And I'm only saying in philosophy, I'm not saying in personnel, but it's kind of like a couple of years ago, I had the pleasure of doing the final three rounds of the St. Louis Blues as they were marching to the Stanley Cup. And when they were playing Dallas in the second round and San Jose in the third round, okay, the Boston Bruins were making their march in the East. And let's face it, in the overall landscape, the Bruins were the sexier story, okay? They're in the East, they had more coverage, yada, yada, yada. And it got to the finals and I picked the Blues. When that Blues team played East-West, they lost. When they played North-South, forecheck, grind, suck the energy out of the other team, they won. And I see that so much. Daryl Sutter has created a team in his own image. This is the way you're going to play if you win. And look it, I mean, there's no Olympic judges giving you extra marks for artistic merit out there, okay, which the Flames will not get. But you look at their record, I mean, like you said, it's Daryl Sutter over and over and over.
Let me be the naysayer here.
Okay.
2 points.
Uh-oh.
By the way, I saw this coming. Okay, go ahead.
One, it's really hard to play Daryl Sutter hockey for 82 games. You talk about the Blues. The Blues knew their identity. They didn't know their identity for an 82-game season.
No, they were in last place.
A coach got fired because they didn't know their identity.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to play it. They played it for a sustained burst, and they survived. Barely. They barely got over the finish line. They were a team. They looked like the army marching with the guy with the fife, with the headband and the whole thing, the Revolutionary War. Like, that's what they looked like going into game seven. There were guys that were just destroyed at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So now you're going to ask a team of limited skill to play 82 games that way for the reward of getting to play another 25 games that way. That's a tough haul. The other one, you want to compare him to the Los Angeles Kings? Where's Drew Doughty?
Yeah.
Where's Drew Doughty on that team? Rasmus Anderson is their number one defenseman.
Yeah.
Playing 23 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Again, you talk about game planning. People are surprised by Calgary. They're going to see him on tape. They're going to play him once or twice. And then they're going to be like, all right, we know where to attack now. We know what to do.
Well
their best their best offensive defenseman plays for the Kraken in Mark Giordano. When we talk about the Kings teams and Doughty, you're talking about a Stanley Cup contender.
But not even Doughty.
I'm not even sure. I'm not sure Calgary is that. But we could say that about any Stanley Cup winner, that you need that stud on the back end.
But it's not even Doughty. Let's go to where's their Alec Martinez?
Yeah.
Where's their three? Their one is a three.
Yeah.
No, Sean.
But doesn't that speak to his game planning then?
That yes, they can win this that's way? My point. That's my point, Zyes. It's not that they're a Stanley Cup contender. It's that they're getting more out of what they have than I think anybody really thought that they would be able to get. And that's where I'm giving Daryl Sutter the credit. They don't have a Doughty. They don't have a Martinez. They're trying to make Elias Lindholm into a smaller version of Anze Kopitar.
Yeah.
He's not. Right. He's a good player, but he's not Kopitar. Okay. No. They don't have Jeff Carter. Right. I mean, they don't have these pieces. That's why LA won the Stanley Cup. I'm not saying Calgary wins the Stanley Cup. Calgary's not a Stanley Cup contender. Calgary is a playoff contender. They're not a Stanley Cup contender because of what Daryl Sutter has brought to them. They're a playoff contender because of what Daryl Sutter. Yeah. They could make the playoffs and probably not win that much in the playoffs, but make it because of what Daryl Sutter, you know, the style of play that he has this team playing and the confidence that they're playing with. But also, let's not forget, you know what good goaltending can do. And they have that, right?
Yeah.
The problem that they have is I don't know that they have a good goaltending tandem. They have a really good number one goaltender. A really good number one goaltender is not going to be enough. Not this season, because that really good number one goaltender, he's going to be the really good number one goaltender for Sweden in the Olympics too. So there's going to be that aspect of it. There's no break for him right? There's not going to be a break for him. Dan Vladar is their number two, and, you know, nice story and whatnot, but no experience at all. So that's an area of concern for me, but they become a playoff contender because of the style they play. If they weren't playing this style, they're not good enough to even
be. I'm going to bring it back full circle, guys, because we started this talking about Florida and Carolina. And one of the ironic things about the sport, just when you think, you know, everything fits into a certain style, things don't. And I point to Sam Bennett. The way that Daryl Sutter has his teams play should fit directly into the style that Daryl Sutter wants to play in terms of Sam Bennett, okay? But it didn't work out there. He goes to a change of scenery in Florida and all of a sudden becomes a top six forward who has not changed the way that he plays, but is being given more of an opportunity in a different system. So it's interesting like that when you think somebody should fit in for the style of a coach. Sometimes a change of scenery just is the elixir that boosts him. And you know, it's almost like Sam Bennett has revived his career in Florida.
So there's a couple of things before we get out of here that I want to get to really quick.
Okay.
We've gone this far into the podcast and we haven't mentioned Ryan Getzlaff. Ryan Getzlaff is the Anaheim Ducks leading scorer in franchise history. He passed Timo Solani this week, scored a goal, passed him. Took a lot more games than Timo Solani. I'm not gonna take that away from Timo. Timo did it in so fewer games, but let's talk about Ryan Getzlaff for a second. This kid has done everything that's ever been asked for him. We said he was over the hill last year. He had a horrible year. Go look at his stat line right now.
Yeah.
10 points, leading that Ducks team that's going to be a middling team at best, probably. But doing everything. Like, he looks 10 years younger. I don't know what's happened, but I just wanted to, A, bring that up, and B, congratulate him. You know, anytime you lead a franchise, and I don't care if it's the Anaheim Mighty Ducks or the Montreal Canadiens or the Boston Bruins, when you're the franchise leader in points, you're a hell of a hockey player. Maybe not the Vegas Golden Knights or Seattle yet. You might be a flash in the pan, but anybody else, you're a hell of a hockey player to lead a team in points.
Look at Timo Solani, you know, and make football comparisons. He was like Dalvin Cook. He was flash. You know, he was flash. He brought people out of their seats. Ryan Getzlaff is, you know, before the injury this week, but Ryan Getzlaff is Derrick Henry. You know, we talk about guys against the boards or going into the corners, things like that. This is stuff that Ryan Getzlaff did, but he also had the skill. And, you know, it was really cool to see him when, you know, be on the Canadian Olympic team, because all of a sudden he's put in with all these elite players, and all of a sudden you see him in that scenario, you know, especially in 2010, and go like, you know, people that didn't know how good this guy was as an offensive player seeing it now. Whereas think about it, Sean, like most of his career, he has played in a defense first for a defense first franchise, which has been the Ducks. I mean, we forget how young that he and Perry were when they won the cup way back when. I don't really care if this guy doesn't have 1,000 points yet. He's going to get there. To me, Ryan Getzlaff is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's a wonderful, wonderful captain. I happen to be friends with a player who briefly was in Anaheim for 2 years or a year and a half, and said the leadership that this guy shows is just incredible. He does it for healthy scratches as much as he does for his wingers on the first line. So congratulations to Ryan Getzlaff. And, you know, if there's any way to say that Ryan Getzlaff is underrated or underappreciated, I would do that, because that's how high esteem I hold him in.
How good would Jack Eichel look with the Anaheim Ducks, a healthy Jack Eichel with the Anaheim Ducks, kind of getting a little bit of tutelage under Ryan Getzlaff, right?
Well, that would be great, Dan, but you know what? This is the Eichel thing. I've had difficulty talking about the Eichel thing because everybody says, if healthy, But we don't know that. And that's why, like, with all these trade things going on, I mean, nobody has seen him play at this level in terms of health. So what do you give up for a commodity that you do not know how good or bad physically he's going to be going into his career? So he would look great there. He'd look great in Calgary. He'd look great in Vegas. I mean, you know, Vegas has so many injuries. They would have to triple shift them, and that might, not sure how healthy he'd be after that. But I just find this whole Eichel thing such a risk. I know people say risk reward because you just don't know this. We're not talking about a broken leg and you trade for a guy and like, oh, it's going to heal. We know what he's going to be like once it's healed. We don't know. We just don't know.
And forget that. The price they're asking.
Yeah.
You're getting Ovi back.
Yeah.
And he's not.
No.
Like, nothing against Jack, but what's he done to merit the package that they're asking for? And now you're throwing a back on the top of it. Like, I can't imagine that the price is going to be what they've been talking about at all. It just boggles my mind that somebody, you know, that has aspirations of winning would pay that price for a piece that they don't know how it's going to fit in a best case scenario or a worst case scenario.
Yeah. You know what, Sean, and I hate to say this because I never like to hear about anybody losing their job, but you know, this is the type of deal that if you make it and it goes south, this could cost you your job. Now, if it does work out and he is healthy, you know what? I mean, you could win a cup, you could get an extension, whatever, but this is high risk, high reward. And I really do think, I mean, if you sell the farm to get this guy and it doesn't work, like I said, you could be on the unemployment line in a big hurry.
Yeah, no question you could. It's just interesting. We'll see where it goes from there.
Yep.
Last thing, guys, I think before we get out of here, I wanted to, we're no fools. We know what's going on around the hockey world right now. We've kept it on the ice for this entire podcast, which is what we wanted to do. But we did all watch Mark Chipman and Kevin Cheveldayoff with the Winnipeg Jets in their press conference yesterday. And with all this stuff surrounding with the Chicago Blackhawks and the scandal from 11 years ago. And I thought it was, I just wanted to give credit to Mark Chipman and Chevy as well. But particularly Mark Chipman for really, you know, putting an emotion. He put himself out there. He really did. And he hadn't been well either. He'd been sick. And this one, another reason why the press conference was pushed back to Tuesday, but he put himself out there and so did Cheveldayoff. And I just thought it was good to see, you know, the emotion and hear the emotion in their voices, particularly Chipman as he spoke about how personal this is for him and everything he wants to strive to do. And also a point he made of this isn't, just we can't just think of this in the sense of what hockey players can go through and what coaches are. This is organizationally. This is everybody top to bottom that works, you know, in our world is what we're talking about, but in the world, you know, should never have to go through something like this. And we need to lend a voice and lend support and lend help to anybody. And I just thought it was a really, he put himself out there. I thought it was really well done by Mark Chipman.
I think the biggest thing that I gleaned from the press conference yesterday, when you looked and watched the emotion in Mark Chipman, and he talked about wanting to be one of the leaders for change. This is such an emotional subject, and it should be. But he's not saying that because he looked at what happened and said, okay, I got to change my ways. We all have to. This came from the heart. This meant something. Okay. Mark Chipman wants to do this, I think, regardless of if it happened in hockey, if it happened in football, like you said, big picture. And that, I think that's the type of people that you want leading the change. not because they've had this big revelation because of what's happened to other people, but because they have been affected. And he said as much directly by something, by somebody that he knows. We don't know the details, and that's, you know, he should have the right to keep that to himself. But there was no doubt in anybody's mind that something has happened in his life that made this subject unfortunately relatable to him. And I think that the passion and the emotions that he showed yesterday, I just looked and said, if there's a movement for change, I want this guy to be part of it, because it's more than just a gut reaction to what happened with Kyle Beach.
I can't even add to that. I mean, that's what it was. He wants to be an agent for change, and he said it in a powerful, very human, very emotional way. I mean, if you haven't seen it, go and watch the press conference. It's on NHL.com. There's a story there as well. But just if you don't feel that tickle in the back of your throat and your allergies starting to act up and there being a lot of dust in the room, I don't know what to say, because it was really powerful.
It really was. And I also second that. Go watch it if you haven't. You'll feel it, no question. I think it's a good place to end, guys. This was a lot of fun. Zeiss, thanks for hopping on with us. And of course, don't forget to, there's many ways you can communicate with us. Send us some questions on Twitter at The Rink, at DRosenNHL, at S4_NHL. We'll try to get to them. If you do, listen to The Chirp with Darren Millard. That podcast is excellent. You got to listen to that one. And all the other podcasts on the NHL Network of podcasts, I guess we say. And this was Good Hockey Talk, guys. So thanks for it. And we'll get to you next week.